Welcome everybody to the Leader Equation. We are really excited to be back again this week. We've got episode number 27 with some of my very favorite people. I know I say that often, but these ones are very special.
This time you mean it.
Yes, this time I mean it. Every other time was false.
Yeah, just lip service.
But I am Lindsay Soprani. If you don't know me, I'm the CEO of Soprani Consulting. We are the top recruiting and consulting firm for the country for all things real estate. And I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Christy Belt Grossman, who is the CEO and owner of Ops Boss Coaching, the ultimate resource for training and coaching for real estate ops bosses. And welcome to the Leader Equation. So today we have Peter Chabri and we have Melissa Andre on here, his DOO. And we're really excited to get to know them better. You guys, they have put 55 contracts together in just April, which is a new record for them with COVID happening. I mean, they have so many cool things happening. They are killing it. And as a team, they're killing it. So I'm really excited to talk through that. They've only been together for 8 months, which is crazy to me because it feels like years. It probably feels that way for you guys too. But walk us through a little bit of who you are. Give us a little bit of the backstory, Peter. We're going to start with you, and then Melissa, we'll move over to you, and then we'll kick it to Christy.
So short version, we're a couple different hats at KW. First and foremost, the team. We closed 351 units for $78 million in volume last year. We're still on track to hit 500, which is our goal for the year. That will obviously change as the virus catches up to our economy. Second role is I started Keller Williams Seven Hills Realty, which is a market center that launched in the first quarter of 2018. The third role is MAPS Mastery Coach. I also wrote the MAPS Group Coaching Program on customer experience. What else? Keller Williams University Master Faculty, part of Gary's Top Agent Mastermind. Investor in a market center in England and through Keller Williams Worldwide in London. And I just recently started an investment property company.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Not too many things. Melissa, go ahead and bring us in. How did you come into Peter's world and what did you do before that?
Well, you brought me into Peter's world. Okay. I saw an amazing opportunity online and knew that it was going to be mine. And met you, and thank God for that because you brought me to Peter. My real estate experience is pretty extensive in the commercial real estate world. So I've got about 20 years experience in commercial real estate. I was the vice president for a local large development property management and construction company. And this is my first time on the residential real estate side, specifically on the sales side. It's really exciting. I'm loving it. And thanks for bringing me to Peter's team.
I love it. All right.
Wait a second, though. She skipped part of her career path that's really important. How long were you a consultant? What were you doing there?
Oh, God, I was trying to avoid that part. Peter's already getting it started.
Yeah.
I was a consultant for many, many years. 15. My last consulting was largely business development, web development. I am a software developer and I have a patent for some programming language and processes. And so that's what I was doing before I saw this amazing opportunity with Peter. And I was kind of at this precipice in my life where I was going, what do I want to do next? I don't really know. I'm going to take some time to think about it. And then like magic, I saw this opportunity with the Chabri Group and jumped on it.
Love it.
Way cool. Peter, did you write that course? Like, when did you write the course, the jaw-dropping customer experience course?
I think I wrote in 2016 or 2017.
17? I was going to say, because when I first met you was when you were on stage with Gary talking about all of your failure with basically being my recollection. This wasn't probably it, but my recollection was basically, I'm a super high D, I'm just like, the numbers, who cares about people? And then you totally turn that ship in a completely opposite direction. So I'm guessing that's kind of where that course came from.
Yeah, it was basically lessons learned and best practices that we implemented and that we learned from other people. And a lot of it was spent on mindset as well. Because if if your heart and your head aren't in alignment with the customer's experience, then it's going to come off as insincere, and that's even worse than just providing a bad experience.
Yeah, and I think that's such a great topic for today's world with everything happening with COVID. We have to really realign with that again. So yeah, love sure. that. So let me just put in our plug here for those of you who are new and listening to us for the first time. We're the Leader Equation. We chat with owners, founders, CEOs, entrepreneurs, inside and outside real estate, along with their shotgun leaders, about what adds to the leadership formula, what subtracts, what divides, and most importantly, how you can multiply your results. So I'm super excited to talk with you guys. When Lindsay told me you guys were coming on, I was super excited because you're involved in so many different things, Peter. Monica, I know you're super driven, high D. I want to hear about your communication, how you kind of pin him down for what you need, because I'm imagining he's in a million directions and all of those things. But I'm going to throw it back to Lindsay to get us started off into the meat of the conversation.
Yeah, well, and let's kind of start with, you know, well, first of all, Melissa, when you interviewed with him, you know, what did you think you were coming into? And then when you got there, what was it?
Good question.
When I interviewed with him, I thought that I was coming into a very heavy administrative role with staff that really functioned administratively. I felt like I was coming into something that was, I was being told it was going to be a lot of decision making on the fly. But I wasn't entirely sure how to articulate that and translate it into what it would look like being here every day. But essentially, I thought I was coming into an intense administrative role, and I knew I was coming into a role I knew nothing about in an industry that I also, on this side of it, knew nothing about.
And what did that transition look like for you, just out of curiosity? I mean, was it like, okay, I'm going to come in, I'm going to hit the ground running? Was it that way?
I thought I was going to come in and hit the ground running, but I came in and hit a brick wall. So it was a little loony toony.
Yeah. Well, and tell us about that. So what did that look like? And then we'll get Peter's take on it as well. Or well, was under the brick wall?
I knew that Peter was very process driven. He's extremely transparent and he's brilliant. And that never eluded me, that information. But I wasn't prepared for exactly how process driven Peter was and actually how perfectly he had mapped out his entire business. So when I started, I thought, well, what am I gonna do? He's already done all of this legwork. And I learned quickly that it's hard to keep up with Peter. He moves fast, he's efficient, and he's got high expectations. And I also learned that a lot of the staff lacked cooperation with a lot of the processes that had been defined across the business as a whole.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, and Peter, just respond to some of that. What did you think she was coming into?
I think the filter she's using is amazing right now. I warned her our team was fractured, specifically the part that she was taking over. And I think that actually was your word. She came in to observe, and I asked her to send me, I think I asked you to send me some thoughts on what you saw, and she sent me an email. And that's when I knew logically she was the right choice, but I didn't have a gut. And when I got the email, then I felt like, okay, the gut is validating what I was thinking. It was a really well done email. And so she said, this side of the house is fractured, and the role itself has a black eye, which is true, because I had hired talented people that didn't match their requirements of the role twice before, and that had really caused some serious damage in the organization. It's funny because up till 2016, people used to visit our team from other cities across the country, not just here in the tri-state, to understand how we did our stuff so well. It was like watertight. We were a machine. And then it imploded for a variety of reasons that ultimately are my responsibility. So she came in and it was messy. Up here, I knew exactly how everything still needed to work, but in reality, it was no longer in practice because I had been pulled away from the day-to-day with the wrong leadership in place. not the wrong people, the wrong leadership in place. So that was what Melissa is saying when she discovered that things didn't line up with what I was saying. And I think I knew that, I just didn't know how bad it was.
When she came in, just to dig into the little details, I'm thinking, I've never heard of an ops person coming in to observe. I love that she came in to observe before she joined you. We do that with salespeople. What did that look like? What was she doing? What were you doing that she was observing?
You want to take that one, Melissa?
Sure. Peter has pretty extensive training programs that he puts makes available to all of the new agents. And he was in the process of onboarding some new agents that he had. And he was taking them through this extensive training. And I had the honor of really being able to, for the first time ever coming into an employment situation, being able to sit through that training and observe Peter with his team and how the team of new agents was relating to him. I got to really take a deep dive into the training and what his infrastructure looked like, what his onboarding looked like. It was a couple of hours of it, and it was really good to see the dynamic in the team.
I love that.
Well, we also had you, didn't you also interview, meet with most of the operations group before?
Yes.
That was important to me that you meet with them first and understand who you were working with and what you were getting into.
Yeah, that was eye-opening. I did meet with the entire operations team. That was a little intimidating. They had a lot of questions. And I also met with several of Peter's top producing agents at the time.
Yeah. What was it that you saw in Peter that made you go, oh my God, this is an amazing opportunity?
His honesty. When I met Peter, when I initially met with him, he was more observing the interview process. And I just got a feeling from him that he was extremely honest. When he did engage, I didn't feel like I was watching a show. I felt like I was talking to a real person. And he offered a level of transparency that was unfamiliar to me, but extremely refreshing.
Yeah, that's something I'll never forget. The first time I talked to Peter, and I was like, he totally gets it. I remember, you know, asking him, I don't know if you remember this, but I was like, do you feel like there's like this purple unicorn? Like, is it a very special person? Or are you willing to grow them? And you had such a great answer for that. Do you remember that?
I have no recollection at all.
It's so funny because his response was, you know what? I used to think that I chased that for a really long time. And now I'm aware that there are special people, but I have to be their leader and I have to help grow them and we're going to grow together. And I thought it was such an amazing, that was the moment when I was like, I can work with him, because I knew that you were going to be picky for the recruiting process, right? And I knew that
that's a nice filter too. What you can really say is that I was going to be a pain in your ass.
I know. Just picky, right? But it's funny. Like, I mean, Christy, you guys have similar personalities, right? And Melissa does too. So in an interesting way, that DC personality on the disc, for anybody who's watching this and doesn't know, but that can be a hard personality, right? They want to go really fast and they want everything perfect. And that doesn't work, you know, very often. However, you guys came in fast together. And I mean, Melissa, walk us through in the beginning, you know, what communication challenges did you guys have? And maybe both of you can talk about this, but this is a part that so many people watch this to understand how to overcome some of that. And Melissa, you've been in business for a long time, so I feel like you were really good at having some of the hard or needed conversations. I don't know if I would even call them hard now, right? They're just conversations to get to know each other. But walk us through, you know, what did that feel like and what challenges did you guys have together?
That's interesting. I think I had several challenges. Starting off, I think some of them were largely intellectual. Some were a little bit emotional. I think it was difficult with Peter because he had already been through a few people prior to me, and it didn't completely work out in the role. So he was a little bit guarded. And although he did a very good job of intellectualizing where he was at and letting me know what he expected, for me, I was initially missing that human connection that I needed with Peter. I needed to feel like I could predict him on a more personal level and understand what he needed from me on a more human level. And I believe that that's where a lot of our struggles lied. And then I wasn't prepared, although I knew what I was coming into would be largely administrative, I was not prepared for all of the emotion, the unpredictable emotion that I would be getting from every other member of the team because of the history of the role and or the people in it and the process is not being followed.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because Lindsay and I were literally talking about that before the two of you popped onto the call today, about teams that we know struggling with people coming on board. So coming in as an outsider, seeing people aren't following the systems, what did that look like? Did you have to really work on developing your trust with people first?
Yeah, I had to develop trust first. I knew that if I came in and just was this big, heavy-handed disruptor, black and white, here's the process, follow the checklist, it would not work out well for me, and it would be entirely disruptive and a total upheaval to the team and to Peter. So I had to come in and just do a good job of listening and helping people heal and taking the time and the steps to gain trust within the team. It was a slow process. It was at times a very painful process, but 8 months later, it was the greatest decision I could have made in joining this team.
How long until you kind of started making that transition to getting the buy-in to follow the systems from when you first started? Are you still in that process?
I'm still in that process to a very small degree. It probably took me, I want to say through my first 90 days. My first 90 days were brutal. But after that, I do feel like enough had happened. I had moved slow enough. I had earned enough. I had listened enough that I could start trusting that I knew enough to make some decisions.
Did you ever feel like you made a bad decision to take the job during the first 90 days? Was it that brutal?
I have a hard time sometimes connecting emotionally to things, so let me try and answer that. There were times that it was so brutal that I wasn't sure if I would be the best fit for Peter. So there were times that I was uncertain. I didn't have a feeling around as much as I had thoughts that I might not be a good fit intellectually.
Peter, what did you think? Did you think that she was coming into a team that was going to have that many emotions? Did you know that it was going to kind of transpire that way?
Well, of course, it's a real estate sales team.
Sales team, right? It's
people that just ride their emotions all day long. That's what realtors do. It's always going to be any sales team, any sales organization is going to have big, strong personalities that emote frequently, and people are drawn to real estate because of the flexibility and independence and lack of responsibility you have to take for yourself or anyone else. So you're always going to get people who emote and oftentimes don't want to take responsibility for how they emote, right? Mm-hmm. So there's always going to be that component. Our 30, 60, 90s are intense. And I tell people, there are many branches of the armed services, and the ones the most respected are the Marines, and that's because they have the highest standards and they're not afraid to enforce them. Mm. And when people come out of 90 days on our team, they are badass. I mean, they are top producers in their mind, and they have all the right skills to be successful. And that goes for our success team, our operations team as well.
Yes, you have some fiery people in there, and you know, that's one of the best ways to say it. Honestly, what I loved watching with all of that is just, you know, the navigation of the fire, because it is super normal in all of our sales teams, right? Like it, and you know what's interesting? If they're really good salespeople, there's that fire in them, right? That like, you kind of have to hurt. So Melissa, like what did that look like, and how did you navigate some of that stuff? And did you have to get permission from Peter to navigate it? Or was it, you were able to kind of navigate it the way that you thought you should?
That's funny. We had a few dynamics, Peter and I did. I don't think I ever felt like I had to get permission from Peter. Peter did a good job of allowing me to feel more like he was there to guide me and direct me, and he kind of let me know, he very clearly let me know what the expectations were. So that gave us a great foundation to go from. But dealing with all the personalities and dealing with the dynamics with the operations team versus the sales team, and that quite literally was the environment when I started. It was very much ops versus sales. We don't like each other. Ops doesn't support sales efficiently. Sales doesn't give ops the information they need. It was kind of a battleground. So I was dealing with a lot of very dynamic personalities, and at times it felt like I was walking through a field of landmines.
She also inherited a really bad history.
Yeah.
There was a lot of legacy drama that she bore as soon as she sat down in that role.
Hmm.
And one of the things that Melissa does masterfully is relationships. And she's super intuitive with people, and she understands how to read them quickly. And she's just amazing at earning people's trust, earning their respect, and moving them forward in their own individual thinking and moving them forward in how they perceive their role within the organization. I mean, she is phenomenal at it. Phenomenal. For her to take what she's done from where we were to where we are today in 8 months' time.
Hmm.
It's just amazing.
So Melissa, because I know a lot of people listening are dealing with that exact situation that you just described with ops and sales, butting heads, drama, all of that. What are a couple of things that you would recommend to ops leaders who are listening on how they can navigate that? I think coming in from outside may have given you in some ways a disadvantage, in some ways advantages. So if I'm on a team already that I've been on, what can I do to kind of move my team forward together?
It's interesting because you're really dealing with not only people, but feelings, and then you're dealing with facts, and the feelings and facts don't always intersect. So I think that the most important thing to do is listen. Don't fear making a decision or not making one. I think that for me, I knew that I had to listen and I had to move at the pace that the people on the team would accept and embrace. And that meant not coming in with a blowhorn and just tearing things apart to rebuild them. It meant you have to take people on your journey with you if you want them to stay, if you want them to buy in, and if you want to earn their trust. So it was listening to everybody. It was trying to cut through the emotion and going, okay, from a sales perspective, what are you fundamentally missing? From an ops perspective, what are you fundamentally missing? And really getting the ops team, we did revamp the ops team. We did restructure every single role. The ops team now, it's phenomenal with the new processes that we have, but I had to get the ops team to a point where they didn't resent the sales team every time they asked a question. And I had to get the sales team to a place where they didn't feel like if they asked a question, they would be hated for it.
Yeah.
Which is like every team out there, right? And so I know that there was like a lot of fiery conversation in a lot of that stuff. I mean, can we just tell people really quickly, like, what did that look like? People coming in and yelling sometimes and crying. And there was a lot of emotion behind that stuff, right?
Yeah, there was yelling. There was crying. There was cursing. There was threatening to quit. There was people telling me they're not going to do what I'm asking them to do. It was daily, and it was hours and hours out of the day. And it was phone calls at night. It was an intense emotional battlefield.
And I think from what I know of you, your behavioral profile was ideal to deal with that, because you seem to be, and I may be off base, but you seem to be someone who's not intensely emotional, so that you're not taking all those. I think a lot of people in the ops role typically take those emotions on almost as if they're their own, and you were able to distance yourself and look at them from a logical, thoughtful place. Is that
kind of
target?
I am very professionally, I have, and personally, truth be told, I have this ability to really dissect information coming my way and extract from it the things that I can control and the information that I can actually use to change a situation. I recognize that most of the time that is not emotion. So if I can take what someone has delivered to me and peel away the layers of emotion and just kind of get to the core of what the issue is, I know that I'm not only more effective at work, but I'm more effective with my children and with my husband, and, you know, with my partner, with Peter. So he's never emotional. So it's amazing. He's very happy and very system driven, but between the two of us, we both function definitely left brain, very pragmatic people.
So Peter, do you feel like that is that was always needed in this relationship for you? Like, do you feel like that's better now going through, you know, the past hires and having people that were definitely emotional and at some point, and then somebody who's maybe a little bit more like you? What do you think you would say about that?
Yeah, I think that's processing. True. I think that's true. I think that one of my weaknesses is a lot of times I'm so focused on the goal, on the task, on the win, on the process. And I bring a lot of intensity to whatever I do, and I like to move quickly. And a lot of times people misinterpret that behavior as not caring or being a robot or being, you know, an evil demon spawn. But it's just hyper focus. And I'm in my happy place when I'm in my hyper focus and I'm moving things forward.
Yeah.
And the reason why Melissa is the perfect complement for me is because she understands that behavior. She responds well to that behavior, but she can also take Peter behavior and translate that and behave the way non-Peter behavioral styles need to hear things. And that's what's been phenomenal, because I've always cared. I've always wanted all of these things. I was just never the right, vessel is the wrong word, but I was always the wrong, sorry, my phone keeps ringing and it's messing up the Zoom. I'm turning off my phone here. I was never the right person to do that, because every time I tried to deliver that information, it was misinterpreted because my delivery sucked.
That's really fascinating. I think that's a really, really important. When I think back over my career, one of my favorite bosses, so to speak, we were partners, was when I was in the mortgage business. And he was very much like you. And I always told people part of my role was being an interpreter, because people could not hear what he said the way he said it. And it had to filter through me for people to understand. I think that's a really important role for director of operations, COO, whatever you want to call it, to really filter and interpret.
Yeah. Well, and Peter, I mean, it's funny. So I'm more emotionally challenged, right? Out of all of us, I'm the I'm the worst here. But
Lindsay's the only one that has a heart.
Talk about that a little bit though, because right, I know for myself that personality can now I've learned how to, you know, deal with that really well, but it can rub me in a funky way because that anybody with a high eye is trying to read you guys like crazy and trying to like fuel what's going on. And do they appreciate me? Do they love me? Like, why aren't they telling me that they love me? Like, what's going on? And they need some of that from you. Like, do you feel like, are you good with doing that for your team? Like,
no, I'm not. I mean, I've gotten better. I've learned the behaviors. Yeah. For those of you that have been at KW for a while, my AVA was a 9416. And, you know, a 9416 or 9515, like their biggest weakness is that they don't reward, they don't celebrate. You too, Christy. Yeah. So no, naturally I don't do that. The reward is congratulations. You made the sale. You just got paid. You know, you won. Right. That's changed. Yeah. High five. Good job. So, but that's all changed. I do appreciate it. I do appreciate the win. I do understand that people celebrate wins and need to be recognized in different ways. It just doesn't come naturally. Mm-hmm. And if and when I'm deep in it, or the pressure's on, or we're near a deadline, like that learned behavior is going to go out the window. And one of the differences between Melissa and I is that she's a driver first, but she's also an expressive. She also knows how to connect and verbalize and take the time and recognize people where they are and give them what they need to move forward and feel good about their day or that moment or whatever. And that's the piece that I lack. Hmm. Or go too fast for one of the two, both.
When you were hiring this time around and you hired Melissa, were you consciously looking for some of these things that we are talking about, or did you fall into it?
No, I was absolutely looking for it. I was pretty clear, Lindsay, on what I wanted.
Yeah, I think so. And Lisey, I got to give her a shout out, which Christy, you know, too, Lisey on my team. I mean, she just knows how to locate the Melissas in the world, which is awesome because she is one. But an interesting thing is, even Lisey would say this about herself too, and I don't know about you, Christy, but maybe Melissa, you know, that personality would also say though, I am challenged with like loving on people, and that empathy thing right there is not as high with me, right? And so when you've got a Peter, you know, Melissa, how has that looked with your team? And are you able to put the empathy hat on and love on them when maybe he's out and about doing his thing?
I am able to. I'm able to because I do understand what they need as people. And I do care about them the same way that Peter does. I love this team. I think about them. I think about what I can do for them. I think about what the ops team can do for them. I think about my ops team and what the sales team can do. I'm constantly thinking about how to meet their needs. So, but Peter doesn't give himself always a weakness that I think Peter has, is that he doesn't give himself credit enough. And he is someone that has made extraordinary changes. And it's a gift that he has, that he's capable of looking at himself and looking at situations and looking at failures and making critical material changes to not just processes, but to himself as well. So I think that Peter does a really good job of seeing that maybe he's not great at loving on people. And then we'll talk about it a little bit. And literally that night or the next day, I will see him shower his team with appreciation and love and respect and all the high fives and all the best words and all the best actions. So although he recognizes that that's a little bit of a weakness of his, he's so good at knowing that and changing it. And people are seeing that. So it's less work for me than maybe it would have been a year or two ago, from what I understand from the team. But I am able to look at where Peter might be missing something and fill that gap and give people what they need emotionally as well on the team.
And by the way, I didn't need to, well, I think I actually asked you for help on that. I think you said something where I realized that this was something that you were better than me at, which is of course what I was hoping for. And then I was able to go to her really early on in our relationship and ask for some tips on how do I do what you're doing better. And it was cool that you didn't pull back when I asked you that. You gave me some great suggestions. Some of it didn't feel particularly good. But I think that was also part of the healing that had to happen in our organization.
That's a really rare leadership quality. I love hearing that about you, Peter. That's really rare. I think a lot of the leaders on the teams that we see, the leader just thinks everyone else should adjust to them and doesn't make any adjustments personally. So that's awesome.
Let's talk about that.
Yes.
Because that was like the pivot. Can we go there, Melissa? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah.
The pivotal moment in our relationship only happened, what was that, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
So Melissa was starting to flame out a little bit. And we were having a conversation on the phone. And I was getting a little frustrated also because we weren't moving some fundamental things forward that I thought should have been moved forward by then. And it wasn't a contentious conversation, but in passing, she just said, maybe I'm not the right person for this role the way you want this role to be done. Okay, well, that's a pretty heavy duty statement from someone who's crazy talented. And so we just talked about, well, what makes you feel that way? Sorry, because it was a feeling, right? What makes you think that way? And the nut of it was, and you can interpret the story your way, Melissa, but this is how I took it, was you were not given the space to think creatively and broadly. I had you pigeonholed too much into my perception of what the role should be and what the wins should be in the role. And it was kind of killing you. It was kind of slowly killing your Melissa-ness, right? Yeah. And what I heard in that conversation is I need to be able to think big. I need to be able to think creatively. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, but you haven't organized the drive yet. And so when you said, look, this may not be the right, I may not be the right fit for this role. That was when I had to make, that moment was the moment where I realized if Melissa and I were going to be in a business relationship together, I was going to have to be okay with it not being the Peter show. And when I say that, I mean, it wasn't going to be Peter's way of doing everything. Because remember, people used to travel to see how Peter did things in the past. So I thought I was pretty good at what I did. And I had to accept that the Peter show was over. And if Melissa was going to be part of it, it was going to be our show. And that had to mean that I had to be okay with some of our strengths becoming weaknesses or not as strong. But also resonating with that, we were going to get crazy strengths because two talented people are always going to be more powerful in an organization than one. And I'm not saying there are other talented people in our organization because there's a ton of them. But in that role, I had to be okay with it not being my show anymore to give Liz a space for it to be our show and recognize that our strengths would change, but those new strengths would be more powerful than the strengths that we had rode to get as far as we were.
That's incredible. And that's because you hired the right person this time, that you were able to accept that and let go, knowing you'll be better with her.
Oh, yeah. But I also think it takes a certain degree of failure to get to the part where you realize it doesn't have to be all about you. I mean, look, every single top producing salesperson has got some significant degree of ego that got them where they are, right? Mm-hmm. And then they put you on stage and you start becoming the top producer of your office and you think you're special. And that cycle reinforces until one day you realize all the things that got you where you are preventing you from getting to the next level and the next, whatever that is for you, whether it's happiness or balance or more money or more, whatever that is, at some point you have to get out of your own way. And your only way you're going to do that is if you get over yourself and you allow yourself to be wrong and you allow yourself to stop learning again. And I think a lot of top producing real estate agents get to a point where they just like being the best in their city. And then that prevents them from growing. I think that's why a lot of us struggle with hiring great right-hand people is because there's not enough space in our world for anyone but ourselves. That's what it is.
Like, mic drop, all, we're done.
Yeah, I just got chills down my back and multiple people just typed in, love that.
Yeah, because you know what? And that's something I feel like we're seeing a lot of this. There's a trend happening in our world, in the real estate world a little bit too. And I know Melissa and I talked about this when she first started. You know, it is, I think we become really good at things, and everything that you just said is the truth. And then we forget about the teams that are helping us get even bigger, right? And these people get on stage and they start, you know, telling everybody how amazing they are, as opposed to being like, my team. And then pushing them to go on stage, right? I want you to go sit and I want you to talk about how you're the most amazing buyer agent ever. And
100%.
How did you do it? You know, and it's a weird thing. And I think egos do really they play a huge part of that. And the moment that you can let go of some of that, man, I mean, that was just so much gold there. It's awesome. You know, because it's a trend, right, Christy? I mean, that's what we see a lot of.
It's also a lot of E2P. E takes you to the stage. Oftentimes, there's a lot of people on stage that are on stage that are still in E. They're not in P. Mm-hmm. And to go to that next level, you've got to go to P. And that means being uncomfortable. And that means letting go of your ego.
I think it's even, yeah. Can I add one more thought to that?
Yeah.
And then I've hijacked this and I'm going to shut up for a while.
No, you're good.
Yes, E gets you so far, and then P is going to take you further. But all of the skills, mindset, behavioral style, schedule, all that stuff that gets you to high production sales success, where you're able to throw out millions and millions of dollars of commission and high sale, all that stuff actually works against you if you want to get to the next level, because you've gone as far as you can go on your core capabilities. You have to spend a lot more time than you have the time for growing yourself as a leader. All that sales activity is ego-driven, which is great, but you can't get any further than yourself if that's your skill set. And if you treat everything that way as a leader, you're never going to get beyond yourself. And it took me probably about 5 years to figure that out. And then you've got to go to P, right? And P is learning all the non-natural behavior skills, habits, schedule that are, work exactly against who you are initially as a person. And it takes a while for that to become the new person. And I think that's why there's this Facebook group called the Messy Middle. That's why so many agents get stuck in the messy middle, is because they keep trying to fix the problems with another system or a better hire. But the problem isn't the system or the hire or the lead generation. It's the person that's trying to drive all this forward.
And if you hadn't have done the work that you just talked about, Melissa would not have immediately said, I want to be part of his world, because you would not have been the person that would have attracted someone like Melissa.
Well, she can answer that. I can't answer that.
What do you think?
No, Peter's journey is definitely one of the critical elements to what makes Peter who he is. It's what makes him the kind of leader that can, 2 months ago, listen to what I had to say, consider what I had to say. You know, listening and hearing are completely different. And he truly listened. And not only did he listen, but the next day that we worked together, I saw a complete change. He put every single word, when Peter tells you something, he means it. He pours himself into his people and he's honest. And when he told me that day that he was going to think about it and that he was going to give me more flexibility and freedom to be creative and kind of have passion in what I was doing, the next day was completely different. If I asked him a question, he'd say, well, I don't know. What do you think? What do you want to do? You know, you don't have to ask me this. You know, when I told you that I was going to loosen the reins and give you more freedom and flexibility to be successful in your role, I meant it. So you don't have to ask me. And he has consistently done that. And he never wavered. He never pulled back. He really demonstrated that he trusted me and that he listened. And it has been phenomenal. And his journey is the reason that he can do that.
That's awesome.
So Melissa, what does your journey look like in terms of developing yourself? We get that question from a lot of people too. Like, what is my personal development? What does my business development look like for you and your role?
Well, personal development, this has been a once in a lifetime opportunity for me. One, I'm cutting my teeth on a completely different side of the industry, and I'm doing it under Peter's leadership. And quite frankly, with him as a leader, he's also a mentor. So that's a huge professional opportunity for me. I really do feel like with Peter and with Keller Williams, the sky is the limit. I think it's cultivated and developed, this company's developed that way for a reason, so that we can all achieve higher things. And for me, a lot of work is personal. I get so much of what I need personally from work, from building things and seeing what they produce and building people and seeing how they produce and how they feel and how they kind of expand themselves. So for me, I just have a lot of ideas about what I want to do with Peter. I feel creative. I have had multiple epiphanies as of late, and I'm just ready to grow this business to a completely different level, so far out in the stratosphere that we're undetectable.
Oh, I love that.
I love it. Well, so Peter, do you feel like, was that moment that you guys just talked about, was that like when you fully trusted her, or did you feel like that Melissa won your trust over in the beginning at all, or how long did it take you?
He couldn't win my trust in the beginning. Had such, I don't want to say a bad experience because I'd learned a ton from both of them, but I had mishired twice and so much damage had been done that she wasn't going to earn my trust immediately. And I warned her about that at the beginning, that it was going to take time. And we went back and forth on that for the first 2 months or so, I believe, maybe even 3 months.
It was a long time.
Yeah. And we talked about that and you were good enough to understand that I needed some more time. I trusted her tactically, probably within 90 days. I didn't trust her heart until probably the last 60 days. I think that's a fair statement, don't you?
Yeah, I'd say that's very accurate.
Yeah. And well, the heart, when you trust somebody's heart, that's when the magic starts to happen, right?
Yeah, which is interesting. And so what would you say is the, you know, it's funny because Melissa, right, your personality is going to come in hard charging. Like, I want to take over this. I just interviewed and I want it and I'm going, like, let me in. And you want to, you know, be the boss fast, right? Which is with a lot of people. And I think Christy and I see, you know, the Peters of the world put the brakes on real fast. Like, whoa, like, you don't get to do that yet. Like, you haven't won everybody else over yet. And you haven't even won me over yet, you know? What is the advice that you would give somebody that maybe is just starting out and they're in those first, you know, 3 months trying to win the Peters over?
I had a call with someone recently and we talked about this pretty extensively. It's interesting. I think that something worth having is worth waiting for. And I think that in this situation, I felt like having a business relationship with Peter was really, really worth having. At times I had concerns that I would never get there with him, or that he would never get there with me, actually.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
And it was painful because it's the one emotion I did feel pretty intensely in my first 90 days. It was painful because I had so many other people on the team that I was dealing with emotionally and dealing with the hardships and the baggage and trying to remove layers. I believed I needed Peter more quickly than he was available to me because I felt like I was on the outside of everything else in the company. But he was worth it. This team was worth it. So the advice that I would give to people is give it time. It's not easy for the leader. It's not easy for any business owner or leader to have someone come into their company that they've worked so hard to build, where they've made so many mistakes and they know where those mistakes have been made. They don't want those mistakes to happen again. And it's hard for them to surrender or relinquish that control. So I think I would just say, be patient, give it time and appreciate the small things that you get where they are relinquishing some of that because it can grow and develop into more.
How did you know that it was going to be worth it? Because I see a lot of people wait and wait and have patience. And I personally wonder, what are you waiting for? It's been a long wait. How did you know it would be worth it?
How long? I knew because I do believe that I have great intuition with people. And I knew the second I met Peter that this is exactly where I was supposed to be. And I told him that. And I even signed my paperwork with him in permanent ink. And when I did it,
A Sharpie.
I pointed out to him that I was doing it with a Sharpie because I was going to be with him for a very, very long time. And that was because I could see his heart. So it took him some time to see mine and to feel like he could trust it, understandably. And I believe that I saw his the moment I met with him.
I love that.
Peter, how long do you think, I don't know how to phrase this, but it was a part of like what Christy just asked. I feel like we need to dig into more. Like, how long do you think somebody should stay with somebody if they're not listening to the person underneath them that's killing themselves for that leader? Does that make sense, that question? Like, how long should it take before somebody...
I guess where I was coming from is I see a lot of people in our industry where there's talent, like a Melissa, with a team that isn't growing as fast as the talent is ready to grow. And I wonder, why are you waiting? Because is it going to actually happen, or are you waiting and the person was not worth the wait? That's why I was curious with Melissa, how she knew he was worth the wait.
If Peter had made no changes, if I had seen no progress and had never been able to account or reflect on anything that made me feel like within my own personal time frame, whether it's family or it's emotionally the trauma of what you're going through when you're stressed out going to work, I think it's a personal decision. And I think people, if you gauge where you're at emotionally, if you gauge where you're at physically in your response to going to work every day, if you gauge the pace at which your team lead or your supervisor is making changes, I think most people know when they're wasting their time and they're just afraid to make the changes that they probably know they just need to make.
Yep, I agree. Those were great criteria, by the way, that you just gave.
They were. Well, and that's, I mean, Peter, because that's partially, I think that's what holds most of us back. It's partially what we were talking about earlier, right? Like, if we can't hear somebody like Melissa that comes into our organization and gives us thoughts on how to do things differently, and we just bypass that person for a long time, then how do we keep that person and how do we keep them engaged?
You can't, or they do destructive things because they're angry and they take it out on the organization subconsciously.
Yeah. So, all right. You guys, can we talk about the fact that there's been a massive change in the operations? What does it look like now? Like, what did it look like? What does it look like now?
Wow, it's changed a lot, hasn't it, Peter?
Heck yeah.
It's been amazing. Every role has changed. So we had no redundancy prior, and that was a real problem. If someone was out, if someone quit, there was no one that was cross-trained to pick up on any of the work that was being done. So we immediately implemented redundancy. Every person that we have on the team was trained on how to do listings and how to do the transactions from contract to close. So everybody now on the team does every single aspect of the role. Everybody backs each other up. Everybody taps people in for support. People come to each other and say, I'm slower than you are. How about I help out? People answer their phones after hours. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have work-life balance, but it's very hard in an industry that is driven by 100% of our client. We're essentially retail. We're always on. And it was very hard to have an ops team that would never answer the phone after 4:30.
Yeah.
Or answer a 911 from an agent on a weekend. Yet we're trying to tell our agents to trust us with their files, but we have such strict boundaries.
It goes deeper than that, though. There's another organizational change that you made, and then there's something more important that you did. The other organizational change that she made was, oh my gosh, I just totally drew a blank. Wow.
The customer.
Well, I'll get back to that. What was it? Oh, the other thing, everybody. Oh, the other thing is that you removed the number of people, the number of administrative people that touched a client, because you wanted to make the customer's journey simpler, and also give the success team an opportunity to build a relationship with the client as well as the salesperson, because the success manager plays just as much of a role in the customer's journey as the salesperson did. And so you retooled that so that one client worked with one administrative professional the entire transaction instead of two or more.
Yeah.
That was the other big change.
Yeah, I'm a big believer. We did it that way too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that she did was when she sent that email, she talked about introducing the concept of agility to the operations team. And we were fractured and kind of locked up and calcified. And Melissa really did bring agility to the roles and agility to the mindset of the people in that organization. And that was like moving heaven and earth to have that happen. And she did it fast. And it's, you feel it when you're around the success team now. Like they're in, they are part of this. There's no us and them. It's just us. And they are cranking, and they have done more with less people than we've ever done before.
That's awesome. Well, and you know, because a lot of times I think what we see is, you know, the operations people. Yeah, every time the salesperson has a win, which means more work for the ops person. Like, there's this weird battle that happens sometimes of like, I want to be excited for you, but that means I get to work more and harder, right? Yeah. And so, like, there's this weird thing there. It sounds like you were able to start to take that away a little bit, Melissa, as far as what I'm hearing. And the salespeople and the ops people now sound like they're one team instead of it being two, and they love each other and want to help each other.
Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore. Thank God, that does not exist in the organization on any level. The ops team has doubled production. We're establishing relationships with our clients that will ultimately gain us more referrals. We have programs we're implementing to get those referrals. The ops team really feels like, and this is great, that they are a part of the sales team. Not just ops versus sales, but ops is essentially inside sales. They are supporting that ops team. They're helping to drive sales. They're helping to get referrals. They're helping to get reviews. And all of that has a direct and immediate impact on sales.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I just had to write that down. I love that. Ops is inside sales.
It doesn't work, right? Like that's it just, and it, you know, and the salespeople need to feel that togetherness of the ops team, I think, big time, because they need to feel like they care about them. You know, I always tell people, ops, your client is the client, but your client is the agent as well, right? We're there for customer service for them. And when they're not, it just doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Awesome. What do you guys think is the best thing you've done together?
Go ahead, Peter.
I don't think it's happened yet.
Ooh, I like that answer.
I really don't. I mean, Melissa has been sprinting for 8 months to catch up to me. And I don't mean that in a cocky way. It's just she's had to learn. I've been doing this for 18 years. And she's had to fix some major problems with the organization. And she's overhauled how her side of the shop works. And then coronavirus hit. I mean, we really haven't done anything as a team yet. We've been operating in parallel, but not together.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting to think about. The visual that comes to mind is like she got thrown into a creek with a bunch of mud and she's like swimming through the mud. So imagine like actually coming into a swimming pool and swimming, how easy that will be and how fast you can go.
Exciting. It's really exciting.
Awesome. Well, and then let's just ask this question too. And Peter, you're probably going to have to take us out here. Or Melissa, maybe we'll let you have the last word here. But why do you believe it's so hard for people to find the Melissas of the world that are going to run with them at warp speed? You know, what stops so many people from locating that person?
Okay. You need a short answer. You have to be the person that earns that level of talent. Mm. And that doesn't come easily. And you have to, 2 years ago, I couldn't have attracted Melissa into this business. Probably not even a year ago could I have done it. It required enough humility and enough personal growth and enough maturity and enough leadership skill that when somebody like her shows up, I don't think I recruited you, right? Did you ever feel like I was like selling you on anything?
No, I felt like you were pretty laid back about it all.
So you got to earn the right to have somebody like Melissa in your world. It's not going to do unless you put in the time and suffer and learn the lessons and grow up and get over yourself and be a leader. And that doesn't happen overnight. And then you also have to pay for it.
Yes, that's a key. That's a good one. I think a lot of people forget that. They think I can find this person who's going to work all the time for $40,000. We hear that all the time.
Well, Melissa had quite a background coming into this between the consulting and the real estate experience, even though it wasn't residential. She was proven talent in other arenas.
For sure.
Yeah, and you got to pay for that.
Absolutely.
Well, and we have one more minute. So Melissa, take us out with how does somebody attract talent like you? You know, what do they need to embody in order to keep somebody like you around and have you on their team?
I would say trust. If you're going to hire someone and you want to hire someone that can perform, you have to take the handcuffs off of them and let them do the job that you hired them to do. Otherwise, why hire in the first place? And transparency. They have to be able to feel like they're your wingman. They really have to know what you expect and what you're thinking. And even sometimes it means just spend a little bit more time with them.
Yeah, time is key.
And how can people get a hold of you guys if they have referrals? Remind us where you're from, or if they have talent referrals who may want to join your team.
So our website is ask, like the question, ASK, and then TCG, the Chabri Group, Tango Charlie Golf, asktcg.com.
And you guys are in Cincinnati, Ohio area?
Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, and I got to tell you that before I let you go, that there are so many comments saying that you guys have been so refreshing, and the humility is wonderful, and best panel we've ever had. So thank you so much for coming on. You guys have killed it. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of people that are going to be reaching out to you. And if they, is there an email address that they can email if they do want to reach out? I know we just said the website, but like an ops one or something.
Yeah, Melissa, do you want to?
operations@asktcg.com.
Great. All right, guys.
Thank you guys so much.
We really appreciate
you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Thanks. Take care.